To call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Today is April 5th, 2023. Let the record reflect that it is 6:17 p.m. Today we have present Representative McKay, Representative McCabe, Representative Allard, Representative Groh, and myself, Chair Carpenter. I'd like to recognize that Representative Prox and Representative Kronk and Representative Ruffridge are all in the room as well. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. We have one order of business today. That is going to be getting started on a specific solutions for the long-term fiscal plan. Before I get into that, I'd like to remind everybody to turn their cell phones off or silence them. And our staff that are helping with us tonight, Kevin Allen with House Records and Zach Lawhorn from the LIO, Kendra Broussard will be the committee aide. Tonight, Director Painter is with us to help understand and go through the fiscal tool, the modeling tool that we will use to help weigh the options that we have presented before us in the form of resolutions or bills. And I would like to invite Representative Painter to come forward and step us through a kind of a training, if you will, on the presentation or the tool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For record, Alexi Painter of Legislative Finance Division, and he gave me a promotion, but I'll stick with Ledge Finance for now.
What did I say?
Representative.
That was a demotion, actually.
Yeah, after tonight.
All right, so and members of the committee.
Let the record reflect that Representative Tomaszewski has joined us as well. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think it was about a month or a little over a month ago that I was in front of this committee with a previous version of this model. The committee gave some feedback on additional features that you'd like to see, and so I incorporated those into this new version, which is the new April 2023 update. So I'll start with probably the largest change, which is this new tab for appropriation limits. So it's the last tab on the sheet. This tab allows you to compare the budget scenario that you craft on that budget tab to the appropriation limit of your choice. And these budget scenarios are UGF only, but the limits generally apply to some appropriations of non-UGF sources, as well as some purposes that are funded by UGF are excluded. So there's a little bit of a difference between the exact appropriations that you see on the budget tab versus the amount you see here. And we made a couple of an assumption here to try to make these work, that in any of these budget plans, you have the same ratio of UGF to other funds subject to the limit that the governor's FY24 budget does. We had to have some sort of assumption just to translate from UGF to this other fund source group. So the numbers aren't going to quite line up with what you see in the other tabs, but they should be consistent with the numbers you see if you were actually applying it just to the limit itself. So the options here for the different limits you can apply to are the current constitutional limit, as typically calculated by the Division of Finance and the Department of Administration. They do the official calculation. You can also use the alternative calculation of the same limit. And Mr. Carpenter from my office, not Representative Carpenter, presented on that to this committee last month. Essentially, there's two ways you can read the constitutional appropriation limit where it adjusts for inflation and population. You can either multiply those adjustments together or add them together. The official interpretation uses multiplying them together. The Anchorage tax cap, which has an identical calculation, is in words, it's described the same in the Anchorage tax cap as our appropriation limit, uses this other calculation, which is adding them together and sort of multiplying. So we think it's kind of ambiguous, which is the intended interpretation. We don't, in the state of Alaska, we don't put actual formulas in our statutes, unlike Anchorage with its tax cap actually has the formula in statute, so there's no ambiguity. Anyway, so this is the alternative calculation of the constitutional limit. You can see it's substantially lower. although still higher than current appropriations. Although, if we went historically and looked back at prior years, there would be several years with higher years of appropriations that we would have broken this alternate calculation. Finally, we have HJR 2, the constitutional limit proposal, and HB 38, the companion statutory proposal. The orange line here is that constitutional limit. You can see that's above the spending in this particular scenario, which is just our default. And then the statutory limit, you can see our default is a little bit above that, that limit based on just our default budget assumptions. Again, you could change the budget assumptions to get them within that limit.
Please let the record reflect that at 6:20, we were joined by Representative Sadler. 6:23, we were joined by Representative Tilton and Vance. Please continue.
Thank you. And so the other thing I would note is that to project these out forward, we had to make a couple of assumptions. And again, just want to spell out all of our assumptions so everybody understands them. So the current constitutional limit uses inflation and population. We're using the 2.5% inflation assumption that Callan and Associates uses for the permanent fund, and then the Department of Labor's population projections. For GDP growth, which is used for HJR 2 and HB 38, there is no official calculation of that. So we have kind of an arbitrary assumption of 1.5% GDP growth in addition to 2.5% inflation. So the limit applies to real GDP, so that inflation is built in. That's based on kind of a historical average, but is certainly a guess since there's no official calculation for that.
Is that factor something that is changeable within this model, or is that baked in that would have to be changed by you or somebody who's controlling the model?
Mr. Chairman, it's currently baked into the model. We could make it changeable if the committee would prefer that. We could make some of these assumptions here because it doesn't feed into the rest of the model. It could definitely, we could change that assumption. We could also potentially allow users to change those percentages in HJR 2 and HB 38 where they have the 14 and 11.5%. We could allow the user to change those percentages if that would be a feature that people would want.
I think let's get through the presentation of this tool and then make an assessment, but I think that's probably where I would lean is to give options for both what our GDP assumption is and also an inflation assumption because it's not necessarily 2.5% right now. So I think those would be valuable. Okay. Please continue.
So that's all I have on this slide, and there's other changes on the other tabs if there's no other questions about the appropriation limit tab. Okay, I don't see any. So on the excuse me, getting over a long illness here. So on the budget tab, we added a couple options. One is to change the agency operations base. When we first did this model, the only budget out there was the governor's budget. Now there's the governor's amended budget and also the House Finance Committee budget. And soon there will be a House budget as well. That could be another option. And so toggling between these allows you to change that base number for agency operations to whichever version of the budget you'd like to see. You can still change, you know, enter changes relative to that, but by giving you that option, if you want to say, well, my starting point is really the House budget, not the governor's budget, you can easily change that assumption here. Then the other option we were asked to add here is for K-12. So you can either add a custom amount. Right now, zero is plugged in, and that's just a dollar figure, not a BSA amount. Or the two BSA bills that are out there, House Bill 65, the House version, that's a $175 million increase going up to about $206 million in the second year. Or the Senate version, which is Senate Bill 52, it's $257 million the first year, $347 million the second year. So those will allow users to quickly put in those education items rather than having to just enter them in the increase reduction tab. Or increase reduction cell, it makes it a little easier to see because that's one of the larger moving pieces within this.
Please let the record reflect that Representative Wright and McCormick joined us at 6:25. Thank you, gentlemen. Please continue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the next option that we added in here was retirement options. And this is a little incomplete just because we don't have the full range of fiscal notes to the bills that are out there yet. The Division of Retirement Benefits does not do actuarial runs on legislation until they get to the House Finance Committee based on they have language in the budget that allows it to be paid for. Actuarial runs for bills introduced by the legislature, but they're not able to access that money until it gets to House Finance. So we don't have new actuarial numbers for all of these bills. What we do have is some options that the division provided to the chairman's staff that shared with us. These are increases to the employer match rate, and these are showing a 6%, 7%, or 8% employer match rate. And these are essentially a way to, without changing to a defined benefit system, increase the retirement benefits within the defined contribution system. So these were numbers provided by retirement benefits at the request of the chairman. Then the other option in here is House Bill 22, which provides a pension to firefighters and police officers. We use the 2022 fiscal notes for similar legislation for that because, again, that version this year has not made it to the Finance Committee, so we don't have a new number. Similarly, Senate Bill 88, the Senate pension bill this year, does not have a fiscal note yet, an actuarial fiscal note, because it hasn't made it to Finance. So we don't have a number for that bill, unfortunately. Hopefully, at some point in this session, we'll be able to fill that in, and we'll update the model accordingly.
Let the record reflect that Rules Chair Johnson has joined us at 6:28, and Representative Gray has joined us at 6:29.
And then one other change here is with oil and gas tax credits. The originally, we just had the statutory payment. House Finance did about half that payment, so you can toggle between the statutory, which pays them off in 1 year, or the House Finance option of paying them off in 2 years. So again, just allowing you to get more closely to the budgets that are out there. And then on the options here, there's no change to the capital budget options here other than updating to the governor's amended budget as the baseline. And then looks like started out with a 50-50 POMV because I was looking at the House budget. I would note that if you're using the current statutory dividend, these numbers have been updated with the new history and projection sheet from the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation that was released a couple of weeks ago, that lowers the statutory dividend estimate for FY24 and beyond. That has now been incorporated in this model as well. Previously, this number was about $2.47 billion in the governor's budget. Now that's about $2.46 billion based on that update from the Permanent Fund Corporation. I believe that is all the updates that we made on the budget tab.
You have a question on this slide?
Sure, I did. Thank you, Chair Carpenter. So, Mr. Painter, I'm curious about the stuff on the stuff on the right. So, retirement options and state assisted to retirement options HB 22. Do those flow into the model somewhere? Can we change those, or are those just, if I wanted to put, say, 20% employer match, could I do that, or is that pretty fixed with your?
Through the chair, Rep. McCabe, so all of the options in these tables, you can toggle between here. We do not currently have an option, just pick an employer match number. They provide a discrete set of scenarios, but it is just a simple multiplication. So, going from 5 to 6% or from 6 to 7 is the same cost. So you could just enter your own number. We could definitely make that change if you'd like to see any employer match number in there.
That'd be helpful, I think. Thanks.
Okay, any other questions on the budget tab?
Doesn't look like it. Oh, Representative McCabe has another question.
So we can play with it.
I believe after the meeting.
Oh, cool.
Sure.
Sorry.
I apologize. All right. So going to the revenue tab, the existing revenue has been updated to the Department of Revenue spring forecast. It was the fall before. Again, you know, at the discretion of the chair, we can, if you'd like, we can make it so you can toggle between the two. Right now, it's just built in as this fixed spring forecast, so everybody's using the same base. But with oil going up recently, the futures market now is actually pretty close to the fall forecast in the short term, but in the longer term, closer to the spring forecast. So not quite sure what to make of that for fiscal modeling purposes. But again, if you'd like to see the option to toggle between them, happy to build that in, or we can just keep it with the spring forecast so everybody's using the same set of numbers. That's at your discretion. On the new revenue summary, we've added a few options since more bills have been introduced, and even since I did this a few days ago, one more bill has been introduced, although that option is already built in to some degree. So the changes in terms of new revenue options, I'll just go in order. First, the sales tax. The broadest-based version now represents House Bill 142 instead of Department of Revenue modeling from 2 years ago. It's very similar modeling, but has been adjusted upwards for inflation. But they're modeling a very similar tax to what they had modeled before. But the numbers are higher because of that inflation, which perhaps it means these other two options should be adjusted for inflation as well. We may need to consult with the Department of Revenue about whether they would recommend that as well. Again, we're just using the most recent publicly available numbers. They have not updated these numbers publicly, but we could probably ask for an update if that's the committee's will. But again, we have updated that broadest base for House Bill 142. On the S-Corp tax for oil and gas only, previously we were using dated numbers on that. Thanks to the fiscal note for Senate Bill 114, we have updated numbers for that now with the spring forecast. So these numbers are updated with the spring forecast and come directly out of that Senate Bill 114 fiscal note for that S-Corp income tax. One note is that does incorporate the assumptions of SB 114, which is that that tax would kick in at income over $4 million at that highest rate with no tiered structure. So in order to give it more options, you know, we're sticking with the bill that's out there to have a publicly available one. If the committee wanted to look into that more, I'm sure the Department of Revenue could provide more detailed modeling than what they did for just Senate Bill 114. Similarly, the capping the oil, the per barrel credit at $5, that was previously an option. And again, we had a dated number in there. This new number represents the spring forecast and again comes from that fiscal note to Senate Bill 114, so it's a very recent number. The House Bill 109 is a new option, the corporate income tax bill that this committee has heard. The Senate Bill 114, again, is a oil and gas production tax bill that rolls in a number of changes. And I would just note that the S-Corp and per barrel credit are both within that. So if you're selecting Senate Bill 114, you should not also select those two because you can't do those things twice. But that bill also has additional items about ring fencing that were not one of the options before, probably would be within SB 114 if you wanted to have that option. The other new option here is to increase the petroleum property tax. That legislation has since been introduced, and when we have a fiscal note, we'll use that instead of this kind of rough calculation we have. You can enter the mill rate increase. So what we have here is a 10 mil increase. The current tax is 20 mils. So this would take it from 20 to 30 mils with an estimate for the revenue impact of that, assuming that the local cap is not also moved. So all the revenue would go to the state, but you can select any number here because again, it's a simple calculation. So you can put in whatever mill rate increase you'd like to see here. And I believe, I have not looked at the new legislation, but I believe it's a 10 mil increase, if I'm remembering right. The custom, we're still leaving a placeholder there. You can put in any number you'd like. The placeholder is the governor's new revenue targets from his 10-year plan back in December. So again, we have quite a few additional revenue options here now, And again, these have now been updated with the spring forecast and have new numbers for quite a few of these. So it should be a more robust set of options on the revenue side than the previous version.
And I think I made a mistake when I was looking at the previous version of this. If you can scroll down, just a reminder for those who might be trying to do this. If you want to change that custom number, you have to make sure and check that custom box. Otherwise, it doesn't show up in the formula like that. Sure, so man. All of the numbers, and just to, maybe to clarify here, all of the numbers that are written there as the data only apply when you come over and click the box for each one of those pieces.
Mr. Chairman, line items. Yeah, we, in order to be able to show these options and then have some customization on some of these with these tax rates, you know, you can change the rates and change this table down here to get them to show up in the upper table and feed into your model. You have to click the appropriate box here.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on this, Representative Gray?
Thank you. Through the chair, when we look at the cap per barrel credit of $5, are we seeing the, is that revenue the difference between when we were getting the $8, when it was 8 to 5? So it's really like, I mean, can you explain a little bit exactly what that number is and why 586 is so much bigger than the other ones?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, sure. So, yeah, the current per barrel credit caps out at $8, and then it's a sliding scale credit, so it decreases. The proposal in Senate Bill 114 is to basically cut off those first $3. So it goes to $5 and then has the same sliding scale. The reason the impact reduces over time is the spring forecast, if we look back up at the revenue numbers, you can see the price is actually decreasing over time. And as that price decreases, several producers hit the tax floor. And so when they hit that 4% gross floor, that producer will no longer have an impact from the per barrel credit because the per barrel credit cannot bring them below that tax floor. And so the differential impact you're seeing is essentially when, as more producers hit the floor, there's less impact. So 586 is showing almost every producer is on the net tax. They're not on the gross tax floor at in FY24, where we're showing $73 per barrel oil, where we go down to $70 or $69 a barrel oil in FY25 and 26, you know, you can kind of deduce that one producer probably hit the floor. And then when you see that other drop down, another producer may be hitting the floor as well. And that's why, you know, at a low enough price, there would be no impact of capping the per barrel credit. And then because every producer would be on the floor. So it's really that particular tax change is extremely sensitive to price because it really only applies in that band of prices where producers are off the floor but not farther out in that that reduction.
Follow up. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, the SB 114 numbers, that includes ring fencing as well. Is that why you can't just add S Corp plus cap per barrel to get that number?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, yes. So the SB 114, the fiscal note has a few parts. That ring fencing is another part. And then there's also a combined impact of all the provisions together because they have some interactions on each other. And so it ends up being a little more complex than just stacking the provisions. And that's why, you know, I thought about breaking out all those provisions and allowing you to toggle them. But it's difficult because of those interaction effects between them to really be confident in that you would be getting a fair number. Similarly, you know, just cautioning people, if you're selecting both the S-Corp tax and the corporate income tax reduction, those won't play well together because that would reduce the impact of the S-Corp provision. So, you know, you do have to be a little careful as you're applying a couple of these things together. There may be interactions that, you know, this model is just a little too simplistic to capture necessarily.
Well, Representative Gray.
So I understand that you've explained that it's complicated, that things are interacting, but if we wanted a rough idea for how much money we were getting from the ring fencing, we could add S Corp plus cap per barrel and subtract it from that line. And would that kind of give us just an estimate of what the revenue is from the ring fencing?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, I believe there's one other provision in that bill that the fiscal note to Senate Bill 114 lays it out very cleanly in a table so you can see all of those things. Again, I don't have that in front of me, so I don't want to speak about it. I believe there is one more provision that has a fiscal impact as well that rolls in there. But if you look at that table in the fiscal note, you should be able to break out each of the individual items pretty easily.
Thank you.
Question regarding price of oil up top. You've got, it's not colored yellow. So is this changeable, or is this the forecasted amount and therefore it's static in the formulas?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, this is not changeable. One of the things that is a complication in fiscal modeling is that because of the way the oil and gas tax works, there are year-to-year impacts of carry-forward losses, for example, if you're using low price scenarios, such that generally picking and choosing prices may lead you to kind of a misleading result. And so when we do our kind of fuller fiscal model, we try to have discrete paths that of a level price, essentially, or an actual official DOR forecast, because those ones will be free of those interaction effects. We could increase the number of options. We probably wouldn't ever want to go to just entering your own price, because that, I think you'd get some of those price path issues. But you could potentially, we could add in, as the fuller fiscal model we have in LFD does, where you could go between the spring and fall forecast or $60 real, $65 real, $70 real. That would be doable, but all of these numbers down here having to do with oil and gas would become meaningless as soon as you got off the forecast. So that's the disadvantage of allowing a changeable oil prices. Then, if you show, well, now we're going to switch to $60 per barrel oil, this number for the capping the per barrel credit will no longer be an accurate number. And so short of having the Department of Revenue's entire oil model, which is extremely complex, built in here, we're not going to be able to have everything work all together. We could have some paths and then just say, if you have a different path, you can't play with certain revenue options. That may be an approach to try to take, for the sake of simplicity, you can have all the options, but only one price. We could also, again, do it a little differently, allow more prices, and then, gray out some of the options if you're off the spring forecast.
Representative Groh.
Thank you, Chair Carper. Mr. Painter, through the chair, we talked about the revenues here, and obviously people can add up and, as Representative McCabe said, play with it and come up with their own numbers. There's been a lot of talk in recent days of a permanent fund dividend based on 50% of the percentage of market draw of the permanent fund earnings, sometimes called for shorthand a 50-50 POMV. Mr. Painter, approximately how much revenue is needed to make that 50-50 POMV or permanent fund dividend based on 50% of the POMV draw from permanent fund earnings work?
Through the chair, Representative Groh, so we can kind of go to the next part here, which is to show that summary. So I've plugged in the budget assumption here is the governor's amended budget, and then growing with inflation. And then revenue is just the spring forecast, but I've changed the dividend formula to the 50% of the percent of market value draw instead of the governor's statutory dividend. So you can see the average deficit under this particular scenario would be just shy of $1 billion per year in current dollars. So now, FY24, it's about $500 million, then it grows over the next few years, and then a little more stable in the $900 million range, and again, still growing with inflation over time. So that's roughly the size with no budgetary changes. If you change the budget, it's really not necessarily just revenue, it's changes from the status quo. So if you're saying the status quo is the governor's budget growing with inflation, what would you need to get to that to balance the budget with that? You need about, on average, just shy of $1 billion worth of policy changes of any type.
Did that answer your question?
It did. Thanks very much, Mr.
All right. Anything more on the summary slide?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I will add there's a couple of other items that were requested by the committee that we added here. So we were asked to add a dollar change from the previous year here for the deficit. So you can see how the deficits are changing from year to year without doing the math in your head, and then a percentage of that. The percentages are a little weird when they're a percentage of a deficit. You know, percentages of negative may not be the sign you expect, but it shows you the rough size in terms of the scale of the deficit.
Can we pause here for just a second? We're going to take a brief at ease. To make some adjustment for the old eyes. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I zoomed in a little bit. I guess I'm about a foot from the screen. Everybody else is a little bit farther. So, so this line 22 shows the dollar change of the deficit. So you can see how that deficit changes from year to year. And then the percentage change in the deficit. So you can see that it's relatively minor changes in the deficit in the later years. The bigger changes are in the first few years where there's more volatility in that revenue forecast where it changes more from year to year. And again, the reason for this shape of the deficits goes back to that revenue forecast. So, you know, you see with the 50-50, a $500 million deficit growing over time a little bit faster than inflation. And that's because if you look at revenue, and I'll zoom in, make it a little easier, you can see that prices are actually declining through FY29 and then growing slightly after that. And so with declining prices, revenue is essentially flat through these periods. So with flat revenue through much of this time and the budget growing with inflation, you start with a $500 million deficit and essentially just grows with inflation until the last couple of years when prices finally start to rise again. So that's what causes that shape, is really just matching how the, you know, if you look at this way the revenue goes here, that's why you see the increasing deficits over time with the budget just growing with inflation. And this cover page explains some of the assumptions. I don't think I really need to read that since I've been talking about all those items, but if you're interested in seeing the assumptions and the sources, those are covered here in this cover page.
If you were just a technical question here, if you were took and duplicated the summary page and created a summary alternate, would the formulas follow through and work so that you could have different scenarios built to compare? Or would you need to basically save another file and do it with separate files?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think the way I would probably do it would be to print off versions as a PDF of each version. We have the scenario summary field here, so you can explain, and this was how the working group did it 2 years ago, was that, you know, on the summary page, you can't really tell why the numbers are changing. You can see, well, you know, if we change something in the budget, you'd see, well, there's a scenario change in the budget, but you could explain what you're doing. And then you could have different scenarios and save them that way. I think that's probably the easiest way to capture different scenarios is to PDF each one and then reset the model.
Okay. Are there any questions on this? Representative Groh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Painter, through the chair, there's been discussion of a, let's call it a package with four elements. Let's imagine a 50-50 permanent fund dividend, just to make sure everybody understands, a permanent fund dividend paid out of 50% of the P1B draw. Let's also assume a reduction of the corporate tax rate under the bill that's been proposed here, which I understand to be more than a $300 million revenue loss a year. Let's assume the adoption implementation of Senate House Bill 142, which is the sales tax. And then this committee has also heard of some spending limit proposals, both constitutional and statutory. If you put those together, what would that look like, Mr. Painter?
Through the chair, Representative Groh, so I put in the revenue options. I would note that if I just do the revenue options, you're still a bit above those spending limits. So if you're going to say, well, then the other change we're going to make is comply with that statutory spending limit under House Bill 38. So I'm going to reduce expenditures. I think I'm eyeballing that. Oh, I overshot. Well, if you're going to reduce expenditures.
Let's just pick a number.
Yeah. Let's go 100 million. So if you reduce expenditures by 100 million and then do all those revenue options, you can see that results in roughly a balanced budget from FY 24 through 26, very close. And then it still would show deficits in the later years growing. Again, that's because with that revenue forecast of declining oil prices, it's very difficult to come up with a plan. And I've played with this model for many hours at this point to try to find different scenarios. It's very difficult to come up with a plan that doesn't produce surpluses in FY 24 through 26 while balancing the budget here, or produces a balance, you know, a balanced budget now and then surpluses in the future, because with that declining revenue forecast or flat and then inflation, there's almost no way you can kind of make a plan that seems to work on both. So, but those policy interventions, again, I picked 100 million because it kind of works for this. These few years, that would be roughly the size of the policy interventions needed to balance the budget in the short term.
I think this might be an example why we would want to include an option to change the GDP growth number. Because if we grew from the static 1.5% to 2%, then it might have an impact on this, reflecting what would happen if you did institute some broad-based tax and you had economic growth, or that's not the 1.5% isn't necessarily just a static number that wouldn't be impacted by some decision that we're making here. And then I guess maybe I would ask you to respond to, or just help remind us about the difference between, and maybe the limitation of this modeling with regard to decisions and behavior.
Mr. Chairman, yes. So one of the things, you know, when Department of Revenue is doing their fiscal notes to any tax bill, they make clear that fiscal note does not assume any change in company behavior. So they're modeling as if all spending and decisions by companies and production by oil companies and so forth are static to the current assumptions. In reality, we know that tax changes can influence company behavior, and I was specifically kind of alluding to oil taxes, but that can happen with other things. There's some sensitivity. What sensitivity is highly debated, so I won't get into that, but certainly there is some sensitivity to taxes in terms of behavior. The Department of Revenue always assumes for their fiscal notes no change in private sector behavior as a result of tax changes.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that Representative Galvin joined us at 6:52. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Representative Groh, for that. That was exactly where I was going, was to just give an example of how we would use the tool to model kind of the options that we have before us. Thank you. Are there other – Representative McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Alexei, you just said a really profound statement that I think should be highlighted. You said that the imposition of taxes on the oil industry, or anybody else for that matter, will the assumption is it will not result in any change in investment behavior or human behavior. I guess you kind of have to do that, because nobody has a crystal ball to know what oil company boardrooms are going to decide or what families might decide to do. So I guess I'll leave it at that. That's you assume a static result.
Through the chair,
which probably doesn't really reflect reality, to be honest, but that's the best you can do.
Through the chair, Representative McKay, yes, that's true. And, you know, I think broadly in terms of fiscal modeling, there may be some impact of, you know, changing the budget and on economic growth. Depends on what you're cutting, what you're adding. There may be different multipliers and different time series when that would have a multiplier. The same is true with revenue and budget items and the PFD. All of these have economic impacts, but generally in a fiscal model, we're not showing those economic impacts. We're just assuming the world is static. And in reality, I don't think we wouldn't care as much about the options if they didn't have some real world impact on the economy. Otherwise, you could just pick a number. But the difficulty is you know, weighing those impacts.
I mean, if I could follow up, Mr. Chairman, you know, we do have historical evidence of behavior changes when taxes are changed in Alaska. ACES is probably the most recent best example where we increased taxes pretty significantly and investment did decrease. And we could look at that. We have that information. So I just want to put that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We appreciate it. And some of the we're talking about the limitations of being able to model this in an Excel document, and those largely policy calls or creative thinking that we have to recognize. We're looking at the numbers, but it doesn't match reality. So to the extent the tool is helpful for us coming up with a policy decision, that's where why we get paid the big bucks. Okay. Representative Gray, do you have a question?
I can ask one. Chair Carpenter.
Now's the time.
I wasn't prepared. I would just offer in response to Representative McKay's comment about ACES that there is a natural slope for an oil field. And if you look at sort of a natural slope, like when it peaks, the production that we get from an oil field peaks, and when it starts to decline, that you'd see that there was already some decline from the North Slope prior to ACES. And so I think to say that that ACES was the result from declining production and that there was some natural decline there. So I'm just adding a little bit of context that without – I'm just adding that context. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gray.
And Mr. Chairman,
therein lies the policy discussions that we're going to have, Representative Gray. McKay?
The decline was accelerated because ACES is very – it was very clear, very obvious, and I would think we could probably show that very clearly with data that we have in the industry and in the state reservoir of knowledge on that subject. So what happened – okay, we need to talk about it. Okay, what happened when they did ACES is it delayed – exploration, you know, Willow should probably be already happening, but projects would like Willow were delayed by ACES in the large scheme of things. And I'm just trying to bring it back home to something that people can relate to that's happening today. Pika, Willow, they should have happened much sooner, but ACES retarded industry investment up here. Yeah, there is a natural decline. That's why you always have to be finding new fields to backfill. So Prudhoe Bay, Kaparik, Alpine, Pika, Willow, as we march westward, those projects have to come online in a timely manner. Otherwise, you have this gap. And that's what happened as a result of ACES. So, there's been a lot of studies on that. And We should have that information available to us, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I'm willing to have the conversation in this committee. If we need to have a more in-depth conversation, we'll invite the people that needs to come in and help us with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions here? Okay. Question for you, Mr. Painter. We have a model before us. We can make that available to the members here. How best do we make this available to other legislators? I'm thinking I can keep it in my office and make it available to those upon request, and I think it would probably be the easiest way to do this.
Mr. Chairman, I suppose this is a work product for you, so you can distribute however you'd like.
I can imagine that there might be requests for changing the model or updating it to certain ways from maybe potentially 60 legislators. So I don't necessarily want to have you have to deal with all of that if they're redundant requests. So we'll make this available, this tool available to all legislators and staff to be able to figure out a way forward. And if there are requests for updating the model for specific things like inflation or whatnot that are baked in that people can't change, then those requests should come to my office, not for controlling, but just to make sure we're not overwhelming you with requests for change. And I think that would be a better efficient use of your time. Okay. Anything else for the committee? Representative Tilton.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. Alexi, I just want to say thank you so much for working on this model, because I'm sure there's a lot of thought put into this between yourself and the chairman. And I just want to say thank you to both of you for making this available to us. And I just want you to, again, to know how much we appreciate the time that you are spending putting this together so that we can put together a fiscal plan for the state of Alaska that will be sustainable. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Tilton, and thank you, Mr. Painter. I would also like to say that as folks dig into this over the long weekend and over the coming weeks as we're talking through what our options are, if there are questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to myself or my office, my staff, and we will help answer those questions. There may be somebody out there that doesn't really know how to use Excel very well, and this is intimidating because there's lots of numbers. Please don't let that be don't let that stop you from digging into this. We're more than willing to help you understand how to use it. So, okay. Doesn't look like there's any other questions or suggestions tonight. So, Representative Groh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Painter, there's some discussion that the state of Alaska could take some steps that would increase GDP. Has GDP ever gone down in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Groh, our GDP is fairly tied to oil revenue, so we have seen GDP go down tied to the reduction in the value of our oil. When prices, went from $100-something a barrel to, $40 a barrel in a year, I believe we did see GDP actually go down in that time.
One follow-up?
Representative Groh.
Can that lead to different – sometimes people have expectations, and I've sometimes observed this, and people have told me that they would like to see a smaller population, and by that they seem to mean they want the people they don't like to leave. And that seems to be sort of hard for the state to engineer. But is it possible that if there is a decline in the economy and then a decline in the population – that the population that is left in Alaska could be shown or seen to be those that perhaps more in need of state services?
Through the chair, Representative Groh, I think that's getting into speculative thought that's kind of beyond my area of expertise, which is the state budget. The state economy is not an area of my expertise, although I've seen numbers that show that the working age population is going down in the state rather than of the out migration has been the working age population. But beyond that, I don't know that I can really comment much on that.
Thank you, Representative Groh. I think it's a good question. If we're trying to predict what's going to happen in boardrooms of corporations with tax policy, it would be equally hard to decide what happens in families with tax policy or other policies that we come up with. So that's where we're going to have to make the judgment calls as policymakers, I think. And to the extent that we can ask subject matter experts to come in and help with that, then we should be wise and do that. Okay. If there's nothing else to come before the committee, I think we'll thank Mr. Painter for staying late tonight and helping us with understand this model. I would also like to say that if there are other proposals that come forward that are being drafted right now, and when I say proposal, I mean a piece of legislation that addresses any of the issues here, then I think we can revisit this model to reflect those changes in a future update to the model. Okay. Well, then, if there's nothing more to come before the committee, we will be adjourned as of 7:07 p.m.